Hey, I'm Josh Barrow, your new host of Left, Right, and Center. Every week, join Rich Lowry, Bob Scheer, and me for a contentious yet civilized debate of the week's big political stories, from ISIS to the U.S. economy to this 47-candidate presidential election we're having. You can find Left, Right, and Center on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
The thing is, when you are very successful, you enter the room of money, and then money, you cannot be there. You'll be treated as a child.
Ana Moilart's film, The Second Mother, is Brazil's official Oscar entry for Best Foreign Language Picture. Starring Regina Cassé, Brazil's Oprah Winfrey, the film was a hit at home and won awards at Sundance and in Berlin. But Moilart says that hasn't helped her navigate an industry dominated by men. But first on the news banter, the fall shows are off to a bumpy start, except for one mega hit, Cookie is back.
This is about us taking the empire.
Stay tuned, it's The Business from KCRW. I'm joined by my partner in banter, Michael Schneider of TV Guide magazine. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Kim.
So the fall TV season has gotten underway. Things were looking a little bit one until on Wednesday night, Empire is back.
The return of Fox's Empire, 16.2 million viewers, and that's just the first overnight number. So get ready to see that number explode as DVR and VOD ratings come in as well. So Fox, they're cheering in the street after a slow Monday and Tuesday.
They had a really brutal beginning of the week. Scream Queens was heavily promoted by them.
Yeah, that's the biggest disappointment so far of the fall, because they've been promoting that show since February. They spent tens of millions of dollars. And to come back and only have 4 million people show up that first night, you know, that was a real disappointment. I mean, it had a lot of great social energy, a lot of people tweeting about it, but I guess they also weren't watching.
Yeah, 1.3 million tweets about Empire, which meant something, and a lot of tweets about Scream Queens, which did not. And that's Ryan Murphy, who's been a very important player at Fox. You know, Glee was an American Horror Stories, you know, franchise guy.
He's huge at Fox, and that's why you won't see Scream Queens go anywhere. Fox will try to still make this show work if it kills them. So that show will still be around as they hope to attract the young people who, let's face it, just aren't watching live TV anymore.
Yeah, another disappointment for them, Minority Report, which, you know, just from the beginning, it seemed like it was in the water that nobody liked it, and apparently nobody wanted to watch it.
That's a show that went through a lot of changes, and as a result, we didn't even really see a cut until almost premiere time. So that was a disappointment. On the flip side, some positive news for ABC, the launch of The Muppets, which was another heavily promoted show. They actually pulled it off. So America is willing to at least to watch the first week of the new Muppets. Reviews were mixed, though, so we'll see what that means in the coming weeks.
Yeah, so far, sort of an okay beginning on NBC for Blind Spot, which is this woman with all the tattoos who's discovered in a duffel bag,
right.
And it's a hint about something. I don't know. People checked it out.
It was bolstered by the Voice, which is still a powerful reality show. So it led into a Blind Spot, at least opened. Another show that opened because it was on behind the NCIS juggernaut at CBS was Limitless, the Bradley Cooper's TV version of that hit movie.
Yeah, and he made an appearance in it, which is not something you expect to see with a very A-list star.
Right,
but there
but
he was.
He's a producer, so he wants to make sure the show works. So far, so good.
And that is good. CBS, Nina Tassler has announced that she is going to leave. She's been running that network, although we all know that Leslie Moonves is the great godfather of CBS, and there is no sparrow in the forest that is too small to catch his attention. But nonetheless, let's give Nina Tassler credit for being a very, very good executive. She's been there a long time, and she's ready to go and do other things. And so she will be succeeded by Glenn Geller. And with the three flagship shows, these NCIS shows, starting to show a bit of wobble, very big shows, but aging a little bit maybe.
Right. And
he's got his work set for him.
Yeah, and they've got comedy issues as well, going down to one night of comedy a week. So, Glenn Geller, who wasn't as well known in Hollywood because he had a job that was more in the trenches, making sure that the current television shows on CBS continued to be successful. Now he's hit the
now
big
he's
leagues.
He's got to come up with the new ones.
And now we'll see.
You'll see. Also making noise last week, more than 1,500 people went to something called Oculus Connect, which has to do with virtual reality. And there were some big announcements because, according to people who theoretically know about these things, such as Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, this is where it's going. I mean, we've already had major revolution in how television is consumed, but apparently soon we're all going to have like chin straps and little boxes in front of our eyes, and we're going to be absorbed into the world of virtual reality.
That's right. Netflix has teamed with Facebook's Oculus to create an app for Samsung Gear virtual reality. Hulu is also hoping to launch their own app later this year. So the way we watch television will once again be changing, I suppose.
Yeah, a bunch of people are getting into this. And what is really striking for the immediate future is that by November, apparently, there is a promise from Samsung that there will be a $99 device that you can strap on your head and use a Samsung phone and be immersed in the world of virtual reality. And that is a very low price point for something that might be intriguing to a lot of people just in time for Christmas, which is, of course, the plan.
Yeah. And then we'll start to see a lot more 3D movies then on Oculus that we'll be able to watch, such as Gone Girl and Birdman through deals with like 20th Century Fox, which is already
Hunger Games from Lionsgate.
Yep, out there doing these 3D VR movies.
Yeah. So we'll see whether we all ready to adopt and adapt to that. On the movie side, Universal is looking for a director for the next installment in the Fast and Furious franchise, which is very, very valuable to them. Perhaps their most important, certainly their most important live-action franchise, because it's one of their few live-action franchises. Of course, they're having a great year, and they want to keep that thing going. James Wan did $1.4 billion, I think, with the last one, despite the death of Paul Walker, or maybe because of it, possibly interest sparked by the death of Paul Walker. Yeah. But that thing was a giant hit around the world. And Universal wanted him back, but he wasn't going to come back.
And other directors who might come back, such as Justin Lin, who directed four of the movies, are previously engaged. Justin's directing the next Star Trek, so it looks like it's wide open at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about James Wan is I think they would have given him as many as three of the next ones, but he didn't want to do it, and the reason apparently had something to do with Vin Diesel, who is now the face of this franchise because Paul Walker is no longer around. They used him as the face of the franchise when Paul Walker died through social media. He certainly goes back to the original film, but apparently not so easy, very demanding and finicky guy who it takes a toll.
Well, they better figure this out faster. Fans are going to be furious.
Because the movie's already dated and they don't have a director. So it's on the calendar. It's the Hollywood way now. Put the movie on the calendar and then figure out how to make it. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Kim.
That's Michael Schneider of TV Guide magazine. Brazilian film The Second Mother tells the story of Val, a live-in maid and nanny working for a well-to-do family in Sao Paulo. For years, Val has devoted herself to the family, but she remains very much a second-class citizen in the home. She sleeps in a tiny room below stairs, is constantly at the family's beck and call, and accepts her lot in life without asking questions. But then Val's daughter Jessica, from whom she has long been separated, moves in. A self-possessed, aspiring architecture student, Jessica cannot fathom why her mother endures what she sees as the indignity of her life as a maid.
Lana, não pode isso, não pode aquilo. Tava escrito em livro.
Isso aí ninguém precisa explicar, não. A pessoa já nasce sabendo.
Jessica is played by Camila Mardila, and Regina Cassé takes on the role of Val. Cassé is a famous actress and television host in Brazil. Here she introduces a musical group from a favela to a crowd of thousands.
De favelado! Mas quando toca, ninguém fica parado!
The Second Mother is the fourth film from director Ana Moilart, and it's by far her biggest hit. This year at Sundance, both Regina Cassé and Camila Mardila won special jury awards for acting in the World Cinema Division. The film got another boost when Brazil submitted it as its Oscar entry for Best Foreign Language Picture. Moilart hopes her film can become one of the five that will ultimately compete in that category, which might finally open more opportunities for her.
Although I am, you know, my career is long, I've done well-recognized jobs in, you know, in cinema and television. But when it's time to choose a director, you know, to a big show with a big budget, they don't pick women. No. So, you know, I hope that if I get a nomination, this would break this terrible rule, which is unfortunately true.
So I understand you had a hard time financing this film. That having a big star, Regina is obviously a very big star in Brazil. Or not obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, most Americans don't know that she's a very big star in Brazil, probably. But she is, right?
Well, this film, we had many hard times. The first hard time for me was to find the right story, right? It took me 19 years to say this is ready to be shot. And financing was very hard too, because in Brazil, most films, and my film was like this, are supported by, you know, government money. You submit yourself and then 10 films a year are chosen. And in these committees, they thought that the fact that we had Regina was, you know, making the film too big, and so they never gave us money. And that was very strange, but the fact that we had a big star was not good for us to finance the film.
What does that mean, too big?
It means that as Regina is very famous, the committees that would represent the government would say, oh, no, we are not going to choose this film, although Anna is, you know, a well-known director. But this time she has Regina Casé, so she doesn't need government money. She would pick it
right.
up.
I see.
You know, I don't know. Regina is so rich, so she will give herself the money, or I don't know. And so we went to shooting with very little money, and the money finished just after the shootings. I've worked for 1 year without salary, without money, just, you know, with my guts. And so now I hope to be rewarded.
This committee that chooses the government funding, they're looking at more what we would call an art house film, like an independent type of, you know, not as commercial in its intent.
You know, it's not easy to understand what they choose. I mean, they choose some art house films, but they also choose very big commercial films too. What I think that really happened is that Regina Casé, she has a TV show. You know, it's like Oprah.
Oprah Winfrey, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Oprah. Okay, Oprah. Mm-hmm. Not only interview and also music, and all her guests are popular people. I mean, a lot of black people from samba, you know, culture, popular culture. And so the rich people don't like her very much because she does, her show is not only, you know, for entertainment, but it's also social and political oriented, if you understand me.
Yes.
So many people in Brazil, you know, they don't like Regina because of this. And even in the film, I hear, and many critics have written and people written to me in the on Facebook saying, oh, I didn't like Regina. I didn't want to see a film. I had a lot of prejudice, but everybody told me to go and I went. And oh my God, she's a great actress. You know, I had a prejudice before. So we had to face that. I think that was one of the biggest reasons for people not to approve a film with her. And also because in the last 13 years, she hasn't acted. Although she is, for me, one of the best actresses in Brazil, if not the best. But she, for 13 years, she just done this TV show, like Oprah, I think. So she was, you know, far from this. So it's been a big surprise for the new generations that she is an actress.
With Oprah Winfrey, she has appeared in a number of films, and there's always a question in people's minds when she appears, like, will she take you out of the film? And you stop thinking that you're in the story and start saying to yourself, hey, there's Oprah Winfrey. I don't know if you had a concern like that when you were casting Regina.
Well, I didn't, but many people had and told me, oh, I'm not going to stand that. I'm going to see Regina all the time. But I didn't because I know she's an exceptional actress. I had to have a strong hand to make her be the way she is in the film. I mean, no vanity, you know, just like a maid. And she, in the beginning, she was not easy to deal with that. And she suffered a lot to see herself that way. I don't know if you ever seen a photo of her.
You mean when she's not doing the film, like when her hair and makeup is
have
done?
You?
Yes.
Have you?
She looks
very
different.
You know, she's beautiful. Yeah, she wears colors. She has, you know, her hair. She looks younger. And so it was not easy for her. But thanks God she did it.
I'm trying to imagine the conversations where you're saying to her, no, eyeshadow is not going to happen on this movie or something like that.
Yeah, and that's much more than that. You cannot believe it. But you know what I can say? She really did suffer. And I, at a certain point, I became the bad witch, you know. She couldn't even look at me. She thought that I was an evil person to make her look that way. But now the film is being so huge in Brazil, so successful. She's receiving so many messages and phone calls from everybody. Now she's finally happy and she's finally forgiving me. She's really fantastic.
Yeah, she is amazing in the film. So when you had this difficulty with financing, where did you ultimately find it, the financing that you were looking for?
Well, to start, we won smaller committees, like in the city committee and the state committee, but not the federal, which are the biggest. So we could raise the money for the shootings.
In this country, you go and find somebody who's rich, somebody like the heir to some big fortune, and then you ask them to give you money. Is that not a thing in the Brazilian film industry?
Not really. And, you know, we could have had money from distribution companies, but, you know, I've always said that this was a very popular film, that this film was to be seen by everybody, that the story was very simple and very popular. But the way I film, they didn't consider it as a potential popular film. Nobody ever considered it. So no big distribution company wanted us. Even my producer, he didn't believe it, that I was could be popular. I mean, I was really alone in it. Even Regina, she said in the interviews, oh, I would like people to see the film, but I don't know because the way the camera is done. I've always believed it. I was always confident that people would like it, but I think I was the only one, maybe in some friends. So, you know, we had the art house treatment in Brazil. Although, like in France, it was not art house. The way they distributed it, they put, you know, the advertisements on the streets and they had a lot of theaters.
Right.
France treated our film as if it was commercial. But in Brazil, it was considered art house. So now, the first week was not very good because, of course, we didn't have much money for publicity. But the second week, it grew 70% compared to the first week. And the third week grew 100% compared to the second week. And now we are starting the fourth week with, you know, almost double the number of theaters that we started. So this is like a miracle. And, you know, we are debating many things, including that the audience would like to see new things if they are good, if they are meant to, you know, to speak to them. And so, you know, it's really being, we are discussing a lot about distribution also.
I know much of the film is shot in the house, and that's certainly saves money to shoot in this house.
Yeah.
And I read that you had such a heated argument with your cinematographer, Barbara Alvarez, I think, that you had to reshoot a scene.
So, yeah, why did you read that?
I cannot remember, but I read it somewhere, and I'm wondering what sort of an argument that would have led you to reshoot the scene.
I reshot it not because of my argument with Barbara. Barbara is a very, you know, intelligent woman. It wasn't easy to work with her on this film, but as much as it wasn't easy to work with Regina because she has a very strong personality. And we didn't have air conditioning, and that was February. And that was really hot. I mean, that house was, you know, like a sauna. And so Regina was very nervous. And that was the day she really, you know, hated me. She showed me that she didn't like me. And everybody was nervous this day because everybody was suffering with this heat. And then, you know, everybody argued with everybody in that day. And that was the final scene. And so, you know, after all the arguments and all the bad feelings, I went home and then I said, well, she has to do again. So I called her and she agreed. And we did it again, not because of the argument, because the scene was going on the wrong way.
I see.
Indeed.
So you had some strong-willed women on your set.
Yes. And I can tell you about my editor.
Amazons.
Yeah, Amazons. Yeah.
Coming up after a short break, Moillart tells us that even after The Second Mother started winning awards and acclaim, she was still a second-class citizen when it came time to make deals at film festivals. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Browse the KCRW store and shop for vacations, wine classes, frequent flyer miles, dinners, and merchandise. Shop to support KCRW only at kcrw.com/store.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Our guest today is Brazilian director Ana Moylart. Her latest movie, The Second Mother, has found success at home and abroad, but Moylart says she still faces sexism in the male-dominated world of filmmaking. One recent example was a panel discussion in Brazil. The panel was focused on her film, but her male fellow panelists, well-known directors Claudio Assis and Lirio Ferreira, insulted her by making chauvinistic remarks and calling the film's star, Regina Casé, fat. They behaved so badly that both men later apologized. Even in less overtly macho countries than Brazil, Moylart says she still has her struggles.
I've been suffering bullying from, you know, partners of mine since my film went to Sundance, for example. Because I start to understand what I had never understood before, is that when you get a certain level of success, it's like entering a party that there is only men. Mm. They simply don't know how to deal with the fact that you don't use a tie. And then they start, you know, to try to take me out and just to say, right. Well, if this is happening, it's because of us. It's not because of you. And of course, this hurted me a lot. And it was very good that we opened up this debate so that everybody can, you know, try to make it different.
Even when you were in, I guess, Berlin, you had an experience where one of the distributors talked only to the producer, who's a man. And not you, as if you were not really the filmmaker.
Yeah. Well, this happened. In Berlin, this was, you know, this is one story that I told in the press, but there were many others. I mean, it was like, it's like guy to guy. You know, if the film is good, it's because of a guy. So that was really depressing for me because my co-producer, you know, he does, he did the financial stuff and he did this, the contracts, but he wasn't even in the set. He wasn't even in the editing room. You know, the film came to him totally ready. So he was the seller, I mean, the sales guy. And suddenly the distributor was just looking at him and saying, oh, those characters are so good. You know, the script is so good, but he didn't even look at me. That's humiliating. And, you know, we have to talk about this to change it. Because this is very common, you know. Even sometimes I am with my boyfriend and I go somewhere and the person starts to talk to him. Oh, the film is so good. You know, it's like a shyness, you know. It's like I cannot face you in the eyes and say, you did a good job. I mean, it's like a woman cannot do that. And, you know, I haven't ever felt that when my films, this is my fourth film, right? Yeah, my other three films, they were success too. They were won prizes and did a certain amount of audience, but they were not huge success. And so the other three films were okay. I never felt that. You know, the thing is, when you are very successful, you enter the room of money. And then money, you cannot be there. You'll be treated as a child. And so, and you know, this is so common that it wasn't even difficult to me to react to that. I think if it was today, and the distributor would do the same, I would say, hey, come on, I wrote the film, you know. Maybe today I could have this. Yeah, I think I'm learning really a lot about all this.
How to stand up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think it will be different, easier to get financing for the next film or easier to get, you know, spoken to like directly as opposed to the man sitting next to you?
Yeah, I hope so. Well, it will because I've changed, right? I won't accept that anymore. That was the good part of all this. And I think, yes, in Brazil today, I would probably win all those comedies because, you know, because of the success. But, you know, I'm so traumatized with all that that I don't even know if I want to do another movie, at least that way.
Yeah.
No, I mean, of course, I'm going to change soon, but that way...
You have to recover. Yeah. So are you on the Oscar circuit? Are you working here? Are they bringing you out in the U.S. to campaign for your film? I mean, obviously, you're here now, so...
Well, I'm here for a Brazilian film festival and also doing some press for Oscilloscope, who is opening the films in many cities, American cities. But yes, I'm in touch. Well, we were announced last week, and now I'm in touch with people, PRs, and also with the distributor here, and we are doing the budget to know what this campaign is going to mean. And of course, yes, we want to do it. We want to fight for it.
Well, so the question that I wanted to ask is, when you interact with the film industry in the U.S. to the degree that you have, or with journalists in the U.S., is the attitude the same or different? Is it better or worse or the same as when you're dealing in
Brazil?
You mean
machismo?
Yes.
Well, here I've just interacted with press. And press, I don't feel that, not even in Europe and not even in Brazil. It's industry. It's money that makes the difference. And I haven't been in touch with nobody from industry. No agent have looked at for me or producer, nothing. The other day, someone in Los Angeles, I think it was Sasha Stone or something like this.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's a journalist.
She wrote that if I were a man, I would have already had invitations. Maybe. Mm. I don't know. But I believe there will be women producers, right?
Yes, as much as there are not enough women, and women are not well represented in almost every area, there are mm-hmm. more women producers than directors, or, you know, of the power positions in the money, there are more women producers.
Can I say one more thing about machismo?
Absolutely.
Okay. So what I would like to say is that in Brazil, I don't know if here is the same, women are very strong these days. I think it's because from the 60s to here, we started to work, you know, out of the house to build careers. And at the same time, men don't help us with the kids. So it's like we are carrying two weights at the same time. We work with one hand and we deal with the house and the kids alone with the other hand. And we are getting stronger and stronger. But although we are powerful creatures now and we are strong, the machismo is still the rule, not only for them, but also for us. You know, the society rule is still machista. And this is a paradox these days because we are very strong, but we are still being treated as if we were not. And so this is something we have to deal now, because I think men, first of all, they should start helping us with the kids.
Yeah.
Which is, it doesn't seem to be a major problem, but it is. I have two kids that I've raised alone, you know, because this is not work for men. And of course, this is a problem, you know, for every mother, because we need to work and we need to help. And in the end, in Brazil, we get nannies or we come back to our mother's houses because there's no third option. And this is, you know, something that we need to start talking about, because men, I think the third wave, the second big wave of feminism, is to invite men to come to the feminine side of life. Because if they don't, we were just, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. We won't stand it. It's
yes,
not possible.
I think that problem is a bigger problem. I think in cities in the U.S.,
yeah.
You know, the husbands are expected, believe me, to participate.
Yeah, the other day, a journalist from England, she asked me, how do I do? And I say, oh, I don't know. I mean, I don't know the
answer.
You know
what we call it in the U.S.? We call it multitasking.
Yeah, I know this expression. But, you know, in Brazil, when we come to educating to kids, men are not there. They are all together in the money party. You know, the one they don't let us in.
Yeah.
You know, we need to talk about it, because the world is not only money and power. There's also the other part. I mean, we don't talk about, you know, when you raise a child and she's, you know, the child is a good person, is well educated. This is more than an Oscar, right?
Absolutely. Anna Moilard is the director of The Second Mother. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can hear The Business on demand with the KCRW smartphone app and get the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.